Do you love daily short stories and want to help me out? Well, in the description below, there is a direct link to in which you can support me. Small donations, less than that of an app on the App Store, can mean the world to me and allow me to continue doing this project. I love bringing works of fiction and literature to people for free. However, it also costs time. And so any donations really means the world to me and allows this project to thrive and continue. And on top of that, there are perks. Any donation amount will get you a shout out each month, as well as the ability to request which books you want me to read next. Maybe there's that book on your list that you've been dying to read, but simply don't want to get the audiobook. Well, allow me to do it for you. Just simply go to the description below. You can do a one-time fee or monthly. Thank you so much. Welcome back, my bookworms, and welcome to the finale of The Number Devil, a mathematical adventure by Hans Magnus Enzensberger. That's right, the finale. So this technically is the 11th night and the 12th night. And I thought, you know what? Let's just combine the two together to one super epic, long, mega episode. So how it will work is I will basically read the 11th night. And basically, then there'll be a quick break. Then I will read the 12th night. And then I will say some closing remarks. And we and basically conclude with this episode. The season finale is coming up soon. And I've got some news for that as well. Anyways, but let's not get ahead of ourselves here. In the 10th night, the previous night, we are introduced to the golden ratio, though it's not actually mentioned that 1.6 value is basically what happens when you take a Fibonacci, or Fibonacci number as they call it, and divide the larger one from the previous smaller one, and then it gets closer and closer to this number, that then becomes the diameter of a pentagon. And then it also gets into using it with three-dimensional figures and whatnot, and the golden ratio and the complexities behind it, and all right, sorry, without further ado, let's get to the 11th night. It was nearly dark. Robert was racing through the center of town. Though he didn't recognize the streets or buildings, he ran as fast as he could because Mr. Bockle was after him. Once he was so close that Robert could hear him panting, "Stop!" Mr. Bockle shouted, and Robert spurted forward with all his might. Yet he hadn't the slightest idea why Mr. Bockle was after him or why he was running away from him. Besides, there was no way Mr. Bockle could catch him. The teacher was much too fat. But when he got to the next corner, what did he see? But a second Mr. Bockle, tearing out from the left, he bolted across the street, not waiting for the red light to change. And all at once, he heard a whole chorus of voices behind him calling out, "Stop, Robert, stop, we only want to help." In addition to the four or five Bockles at his heels, and the ones now pouring out of the sides of the streets, as alike as peas in a pod, there were soon Bockles running straight at him. Robert shouted for help. A bony hand grabbed him by the shoulder and pulled him into a doorway. Thank God, it was the Number Devil. "Follow me," he whispered. "I know a private elevator that will take us to the top floor." The elevator was paneled with mirrors, so Robert could see an endless band of Number Devils and Robert lookalikes. This is too much, Robert thought. These crowds are the same people. Still, he was free from the Bockle voices in the street, and when they reached the 50th floor and the elevator door opened noiselessly, he and the Number Devil stepped out into the delightful roof garden. "You don't know how much I've wished for this," Robert said as they rocked peacefully on a swinging bench. From where they sat, the people down in the street looked like ants. "I had no idea there were so many Bockles in the world," said Robert. "Well, they're nothing to you," the Number Devil said reassuringly. "You needn't be afraid of them." I guess it's the kind of thing that happens only in dreams, Robert thought. Or if you hadn't shown up in time, I wouldn't have known what to think. That's why I'm here. Now that there's no one to disturb us, tell me what's wrong. All week long, I've been brooding over what you showed me last time and how it hangs together. I'm glad you showed me all those tricks. They're fun, but I can't help wondering why. Why do they turn out the way they do? The blankety blank number, for instance, and the five. Why do rabbits behave as if they knew what a Fibonacci number is? Why don't unreasonable numbers ever end? And why does what you say hold true always, forever, and ever?
So that's it, said the number devil. You want to do more than play around with numbers. You want to know what's behind them, the rules of the game, so to speak, the meaning of it all. In other words, you want to know what a mathematician wants to know.
I don't know what mathematicians want to know. I only know you've shown me things but never proved them.
You're right, said the number devil. I apologize. The problem is, showing things is easy and, as you put it, fun. Guessing isn't bad, and testing guesses is even better. But we've done a lot of that. But none of it is enough. Proof is all. And now you even want hard proof.
Right, Robert agreed. Oh, part of what you say, I get just like that. But there are things I just don't get at all. I don't see how or why they work.
To make a long story short, you're dissatisfied? Well, that's good. Do you think we number devils are always satisfied with what we come up with? Not on your life. No, we're constantly contemplating new ways of proving things. Thinking. Pondering. Meditating. It's a way of life with us. But when a light finally does go on, and it can take ages because in mathematics the centuries fly by, then we're pleased as punch. Only then are we satisfied.
You must be exaggerating. It can't be that hard.
You have no idea, the number devil replied. Even when you think you've understood something, you may wake up one morning and realize there's a catch.
Can you give me an example?
The number devil rubbed his chin and paused for a moment. You think you know everything there is to know about hopping. What could be simpler than going from 2 to 2 times 2, and from 2 times 2 to 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, right? 2 to the first, 2 squared, 2 cubed, and so on. It's a kinch.
Yes. What happens when you hop with 0? 1 to the 0th, 8 to the 0th, or 100 to the 0th?
What do you think you'll get? Shall I tell you? You'll laugh. The answer is 1. Always 1. 1 to the 0th equals 1. 8 to the 0th equals 1. 100 to the 0th equals 1.
How can that be?
Robert was amazed. Don't ask. I could prove it to you, but you'd go mad in the process.
Try me, said Robert. Now he was angry, but the number devil remained calm.
Have you ever tried to cross a raging stream? The number devil asked.
Have I? Robert cried. I'll say I have.
You can't swim across the current. The current would sweep you into the rapids, but there are a few rocks in the middle. So what do you do?
I see which ones are close enough together, so I can leap from one to the next. If I'm lucky, I make it. If I'm not, I don't.
That's how it is with mathematical proofs, the number devil told Robert. But since mathematicians have spent a few thousand years finding ways to cross the stream, you don't need to start from scratch. You've got all kinds of rocks to rely on. They've been tested millions of times and are guaranteed slip-resistant. When you have a new idea, a conjecture, you look up for the nearest safe rock. And from there, you keep leaping, with the greatest of caution. Of course, until you reach the other side, the shore.
That's all well and good, said Robert, but tell me, where is the shore for numbers or pentagons or hopping?
Good question, said the number devil. The shore is a couple of simple sentences. Couldn't be simpler. Once you get to them, you're home free. They're your proof.
What are they?
Well, here's one. Every ordinary number, be it 14 or 14 billion, may be followed by one and only one number, namely that number plus one. Here's another. A point may not be divided, because it has no area, and yet another. Two points on an even plane can be connected by only one line, which then continues endlessly in both directions.
I see, said Robert. And starting with a couple of sentences, you can leap your way to those blankety-blank numbers, or even to the Fibonacci numbers.
Easily. The number devil's eyes shone. You can go even farther. You just have to look each time you leap.
Picture yourself in the middle of the stream. You've got rocks to rely on, remember?
Sometimes the rocks are so far apart that you can't make it from one to the next. And if you try jumping, you fall in. Then you have to take tricky detours, and even they may not be able to help you in the end. You may come up with an idea, but then you find that it doesn't lead anywhere. Or you may find that your brilliant idea wasn't so brilliant after all. The number devil looked over at Robert with a gentle smile. Remember what I showed you the very first time, the numbers I conjured out of ones? 1 times 1 equals 1, 11 times 11 equals 121, 111 times 111 equals 12,321, 111 times 1,111 equals 1,234,321, and so on and so forth, as though we could go on indefinitely. Robert remembered that night well. Right. And you got so angry when I tried to say there was something fishy about it. But you know I only said that to get your goat. I had nothing at all to back up with. You had a good nose, the number devil admitted. Later I went back to it, and you know what? When I came to 1,111,111,111 times 1,111,111,111, I fell in. And all I got was number hash. So even though the formula worked well enough for a while, it collapsed in the end without proof. In other words, even a number devil can fall on his face. I remember one, the man in the moon, his name was, who put an idea into a formula he thought would always come out without exception. Well, he tested it 1,500,000,000 times, the madman, and each time it worked, he computed himself half to death with his giant computer. He was much, much more precise than we were with our blankety-blank 1.618. Until he was absolutely positive that the formula would work forever. Then he sat back satisfied. It wasn't long, however, before another number devil, I've forgotten his name, came on the scene, and he computed himself 3/4 to death, and with even greater precision. And what did he find? The number devil looked at Robert. That the man in the moon was wrong. His wonderful formula worked almost always, but not always, and almost isn't enough. The poor devil, who was working on prima donna numbers, a ticklish business, let me tell you, and fiendishly difficult to prove. I agree, said Robert. Even when only a few lousy pretzels are at stake, it drives me crazy the way Mr. Bockles goes on about why it takes X hours for Y bakers to bake pretzels. I much prefer your tricks. You're too hard on him. Think of the poor man knocking out lesson plans night after night. He can't go rock leaping as we do whenever we please. I feel sorry for him. But he's gone home to correct your homework. Robert looked down at the street, and sure enough, there wasn't a single Bockle in sight. Many of us, the number devil went on, have an even harder time of it than your Bockle. However, one of my older colleagues, the well-known Lord Russell, once took it into his head to prove that 1 + 1 = 2. Look at this proof. This is how he went about it. It's a lot of gibberish. Said Robert with a shiver. That's horrendous. And all to show that 1 + 1 = 2? Something he knew anyway? That's right, the number devil nodded. Even though everyone knows that 1 + 1 = 2, Lord Russell wants to prove it. Now you can see where that can lead. The number devil paced up and down, getting carried away. By the way, he continued, there are all sorts of problems that look almost as obvious as 1 + 1 = 2 and are just as hard to prove mathematically. Let's say you're going to take a few weeks to drive around the country and you have 25 friends to visit, each in a different city. You get out your map and look for the shortest route to save the most time and money. What's the best way to go about it? Sounds easy, doesn't it? Well, let me tell you, a good many people have lost a good deal of sleep over it, even some of the most crafty number devils. And not one of them has cracked it to this day. What's so hard about it? Robert asked, surprised. You just go through all the many possibilities. You chart each of them precisely on the map, and then you work out which is the shortest possible route. What you mean is you make a kind of grid with 25 dots. Right. If I want to visit only two friends, there would only be one route from A to B. A line from A to B. Well, actually, there are two routes. You could also go from B to A. But that's the same, said Robert. Now, if I wanted to visit three friends, then there would be six possibilities. A to B to C, A to C to B, B to A to C, B to C to A, C to A to B, C to A, B to A, with B, A, and C all forming a triangle. Note that all these routes are equal in length. By the time we have four friends to visit, things are considered more complex. With a square, a rectangle with A, B, C, and D, as well as then diameter cross from B to C and A to D, with the two diameters intersecting
at the middle.
"You know," said Robert, "I'm not quite in the mood to count up all the roots."
"Well, there are precisely 24," said the number devil. "It's very much like seating, like the seating problem in your class. I'm afraid you remember the terrible time we had with Al and Betsy and Charlie and the gang because there were so many possibilities?"
"You bet I remember. Three kids, three room, four kids, four room, and so on."
"Well, it's the same with the Tor problem."
"Then why is it so hard to solve?" Robert asked.
"All I need is to find the various routes and pick the shortest."
"That's what you think," the number devil replied. "When 25 friends, you have 25 room possibilities. That's an awfully large number, approximately 1.600000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000
Or 1.6 times 10 to the 25th.
You can't possibly test them all and determine which is the shortest. It's beyond even the most powerful computer in the world.
In other words, no way. Not necessarily. We racked our brains over this one for quite some time now. And as I say, the cleverest number devils have tried every trick in the book. Sometimes we can work it out, and sometimes we can't.
Too bad, said Robert. Sometimes it's only halfway.
What's worse, we can't even prove with any certainty that no perfect solution exists. That would be something, at least. It would allow us to stop looking for one. Besides, proving that no proof exists in a proof in itself of sorts.
Hmm, said Robert. It's comforting to know that number devils can fall on their faces. I thought you could conjure your way in and out of everything.
It just looks that way. Many times the time have been stuck in the middle of the stream. There are times I feel fortunate to get out with dry feet. Heaven knows I don't want to put myself out there with the greats, but even they, and you'll eventually come to know some of them, even they have their problems, which only means that mathematics will never be over and done with. And a good thing, too, there'll always be plenty to keep us busy. So goodbye for now, my boy. First thing in the morning, I'll be looking into the simple algorithm for polytopic surfaces.
The what?
The best way to unravel a foul-up. And for that, I need a good night's sleep. I'm off to bed. Good night.
And with that, the number devil disappeared, leaving Robert to rock peacefully on the swinging bench.
I wonder what polytopic surfaces are, Robert thought. But then he decided it doesn't matter. All that mattered was that he didn't have to worry about Mr. Bockle anymore. Whenever Mr. Bockle got on his back, the number devil would come to his rescue. The night was mild, and Robert gave himself up to the pleasure of rocking and dreaming, rocking and thinking about nothing at all till the break of day.
And that is the 11th night.
We will continue again shortly. Please take a break if you're able to. Maybe have some drink some water. If you're running, you can continue. And I would just like to say thank you again. And I will see you for the second part in a bit.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your break. Let us now conclude The Number Devil, a mathematical adventure by Hans Magnus Enzensberger, with the 12th night. Let's begin. Robert had stopped dreaming. There were no giant fish to gobble him up, no ants to crawl up his legs. Even Mr. Bockle and all his lookalikes left him in peace. He slid no more. He froze no more. He was no longer locked away in cellars. He slept better than he had ever slept before. That was all well and good, but it also got to be rather boring. What was the number devil up to? Maybe he'd had a good idea and couldn't prove it. Or maybe he'd got bogged down in his polyp surfaces, or whatever it was talked about last time. Though maybe he'd forgotten about Robert. Robert didn't like that idea in the least. His mother couldn't understand why he spent hours on end drawing dots and lines and mumbling about visits to non-existent friends in cities he'd never seen.
Do your homework, Robert, she would say.
Once Mr. Bockle caught him scribbling away in class. What are you up to here, Robert? Give it here. But Robert had managed to crumple the paper with the huge number triangle into a ball and to sneak it over to Charlie. He could count on good old Charlie. Charlie was used to covering for him. One night, however, he slept so soundly that it took him a long time to realize there was someone pounding on his door. Robert, Robert. And who
did he see when he finally jumped out of bed and opened it but the number devil.
"I'm so glad to see you," he said. "I've missed you. Come quickly," the number devil said. "I've got an invitation for you here."
And he handed him a printed card with a gold border. It said, By special messenger, the presence of Robert, pupil of the number devil Teplotaxel, is hereby requested for dinner this evening in Number Hell, Number Heaven." The signature was an ineligible squiggle that appeared to be an Arabic script.
"So your name is Teplotaxel," Robert said, pulling on his clothes as fast as he could. "Why didn't you tell me before?"
"Only the inner circle can know a number devil's name," he replied.
"Does that mean I now belong to the inner circle?"
"Apparently, otherwise you wouldn't have received an invitation."
"Funny," Robert said. "The invitation says Number Hell / Number Heaven. What's that supposed to mean? Either one or the other?"
"Number Paradise, Number Hell, Number Heaven, it's all the same in the end." He went over to the window and opened it as far as it would go. You'll see. Ready?"
"Yes," said Robert, though he was starting to feel a bit uneasy about the whole thing.
"Then climb on my shoulders."
Robert was afraid he'd be too heavy for the number devil, who was no giant, but he didn't want to insult him. And lo and behold, no sooner had he put his arms around the number devil's neck than the number devil leaped out of the window and soared into the air. This could only happen in a dream, Robert thought. But why not? A flight without noise, without safety belts, without silly stewardesses, giving coloring books and plastic toys as if you were 3 years old, it was good for a change. It ended in a perfect landing on the terrace of a magnificent palace.
"Here we are," said the number devil, letting Robert down.
"Where's my invitation?" asked Robert.
"I'm afraid I left it at home."
"Don't worry," said the number devil. "Anyone who really wants to can enter. The trick is to get here in the first place, and that, as you can imagine, very few manage."
Robert had in fact noticed that nobody seemed to be checking the people going to the giant double door. So in they went and off down a long, long corridor with endless doors, many of which were open to varying degrees. Robert peeked into the very first room. Teplotaxel put his fingers to his lips and said, "Shh." What they saw was a very old man with snow-white hair and a long nose. He was toddling around and around in circles and carrying out a great debate with himself.
"All Englishmen are liars," the man mumbled. "But if I say it, what then? I'm an Englishman myself, so I'm lying too. But then what I've just said, namely, that all Englishmen are liars, is not true. But if Englishmen tell the truth, what I said before must be true as well. In other words, we are liars."
The number devil signaled to Robert, and on they went. That's poor Lord
Russell," Teplotaxel explained to his guest. "You remember the one who proved 1 + 1 = 2?
"Isn't he a bit confused?" Robert asked. "Not that I'm surprised. He must be terribly old."
"He's not the least bit confused. He's got all his wits about him. As for his age, age means nothing here. Besides, Lord Russell is one of our youngest. He hasn't reached 150 yet."
"So you have some pretty elderly residents here in this palace."
"You'll see," said Teplotaxel. "In Number Hell, Number Heaven, no one ever dies."
They came to another open door and peered in to see a man squatting in the corner. He was so tiny that Robert didn't notice him at first, though that may have been because the room was filled with the most curious objects. A few were large pretzels made of glass. Mr. Bockle would have been pleased, though you couldn't eat them, and they had the weirdest shapes. The number devil called Robert's attention to an unusual-looking green bottle.
"Examine it carefully," Teplotaxel whispered into Robert's ear. "Can you tell the inside from the outside?"
"Unbelievable," thought Robert. "It could only exist in a dream.
Imagine you wanted to paint the inside blue and the outside red. What would you do? There are no edges. You wouldn't know where to stop the blue or start the red."
"And that little man is the one who invented it?" asked Robert. "He looks as if he would be happier inside the bottle."
"Not so loud. Do you see what his name is? Dr. Little. Dr. Happy Little. But let's go now.
We have lots more to see. The next few doors they passed had Do Not Disturb signs on them. But one was wide open, and there they stopped. The walls and furniture were coated with a fine dust.
That's no ordinary dust, said Taplotaxel. It has more granules than a body could count in a lifetime. If you wanted to cover the head of a pin with it, you'd have to gather all the dust in this room. The man you see there is Professor Singer. He's the man who discovered the dust.
Professor Singer, a pale man with a goatee and piercing eyes, was singing to himself and doing a nervous little dance around the room. Infinity times infinity is infinity, he sang. Super infinity times infinity is super infinity.
Let's get out of here, Robert thought.
His friend knocked politely on one of the next doors, and a friendly voice called out to them,
Come in.
Taplotaxel was right. The palace's inhabitants were so old, he seemed a stripling by comparison. Nonetheless, the two very old men who greeted them turned out to be quite lively.
Welcome, gentlemen, welcome, said one of them, a man with large eyes and a wig. My name is Owl, and this is Professor Horrors.
The latter looked very stern, and he scarcely glanced up from his papers. Robert had the feeling he was less than happy with their visit.
We were just chatting about the prima donna's numbers, said the friendly one.
A fascinating topic, as I'm sure you are aware.
Oh, yes, said Robert. You never know where you stand with them.
Right you are, but with the help of my colleagues, I hope to get to the bottom of them.
And what does Professor Horrors do, if I may ask? But Professor Horrors refused to divulge the subject of his labors.
Professor Horrors is responsible for a brilliant discovery, a whole new category of number, in fact. Tell our friends here what you call them, will you?
M, said the man, with a stern look about him, and that was all he said.
He means the imaginative numbers, Taplotaxel explained hurriedly.
And then he apologized to the eccentric gentleman for having interrupted their labors. And so it went. They went in on Bonacci, but his room was teeming with rabbits. They passed rooms where Mayans and Arabs and Persians and Indians were working and talking and sleeping. The farther they went, the older the people seemed to be.
The one over there, the one who looks like a Maharaja, said Taplotaxel. He's at least 2,000 years old.
The rooms grew in size and splendor until finally Taplotaxel and Robert stood before a kind of temple.
We're not allowed in here, said Taplotaxel. The man in white you'll see is so important that a little devil like me can't even say boo to him. He's from Greece, and you wouldn't believe the things he's discovered.
See those tiles on the floor? The ones with the pentagons and stars? Well, one day he decided to cover the floor with them. And when he couldn't do it without leaving gaps between the tiles, he came up with unreasonable numbers to explain why. Rutabagas, remember? The rutabaga of two, the rutabaga of five, and the blankety-blank numbers? You remember those, of course.
Oh, yes, Robert assured him. Well, Pythagoras is the man's name, the number devil whispered. You know. What else he came up with? The word mathematics. Anyway, here we go.
The hall they now entered was the largest Robert had ever seen. It was bigger than a gym, bigger than a cathedral, and much, much more beautiful. The walls were decorated with mosaics of the most varied patterns, and a majestic throne of gold stood at the first landing on a gigantic flight of steps that led so high there was no telling where it ended. Robert couldn't get over it. He had never dreamed the number devil lived in such luxury.
Number hell my foot. This is paradise. Don't be so sure. Oh, I can't complain, but there are times late at night when I'm getting nowhere with my problem, and I think I'll go out of my mind. I'm only one step away from the solution, but a wall has grown up to keep me from it. That's hell.
Robert tactfully held his tongue and looked around. Only then did he notice the endlessly long table in the middle of the hall and the waiters along the walls. Suddenly, a beanpole of a man at the entrance swung a stick as far back as it would go and struck a gong, which resounded all throughout the palace.
Follow me, said Taplotaxel. Our places are at the end of the table.
Once they had taken their seats, they watched the more famous number devils file past. Robert recognized the owl and Professor Horrors and then Bonacci from the rabbit on his shoulder, but most of them he had never seen before. There were solemn Egyptians. There were Indians with pink dots on their foreheads. There were Arabs wearing burnouses and monks in habits. There were Africans and American Indians, Turks with curved swords, Americans in jeans. There were thousands of them. Robert was amazed at how many number devils there were, but also at how few women when he saw a woman he saw among them. He spotted no more than six or seven, and no one seemed to be taking them seriously. "Why aren't there more women?" he asked. "Is there any rule against them?" They used to have a hard time of it. Palace policy was clear. Mathematics is man's work. But things seemed to be changing of late. When the guests had taken their seats and mumbled their greetings, the beanpole struck his gong again, and the hall fell silent. A Chinese gentleman in fine silk raiment ascended first the stairs, and then the throne. "Who is that?" Robert asked. "Could be the man who invented zero," Teplotaxel whispered. "Is he the greatest of them all?" "The second greatest," said Teplotaxel. "The greatest lives up where the stairs lead, in the clouds." "Is he Chinese too?" "Nobody knows. None of us have ever seen him face to face, but we revere him greatly. He is commander-in-chief of all number devils, the man who discovered one. Though for all we know, he may not be a man at all. He may be a woman." Robert was so impressed that he couldn't say nothing. Meanwhile, the waiters had begun to serve the meal. "Hey, they're starting with dessert," Robert said, when a waiter placed a slice of pie on his plate. "Shh, not so loud, my boy. We eat nothing but pies, because pies are round and the circle is the most perfect of all figures. Here, try one." Robert had never tasted anything so delicious in all his life. "Suppose you want to find out how big the pie is," said the number devil. "How would you go about it?" "Don't know. You never showed me how, and in school we're still on pretzels." "What you need is an unreasonable number, the most important of them all. A man all the way up at the head of the table discovered it more than 2,000 years ago, another Greek. Without it, we wouldn't know to this day how big a pie like this is, or how big our wheels or rings or oil tanks are. In other words, anything that's round, even the moon and our very own Earth, without the number pi, we'd be lost." By this time, the room was abuzz with number devils having a good time, though here and there, Robert saw one staring into space and another one making balls out of pie dough. Otherwise, they all ate heartily and drank heartily from pentagonal crystal glasses, fortunately, and not Dr. Little's weird bottles. When the repast was over, the beanpole sounded the gong again, and the man who may have discovered zero arose from his throne and disappeared up the stairs. Gradually, the other number devils stood as well, the most eminent first, of course, and started back to their rooms. Soon, only Robert and his protector were left. Just as they were about to go, a gentleman in a magnificent uniform came up to them. "You must be the great General Secretary, Robert thought, the man who signed his invitation.
"So this is your apprentice," said the dignitary in a sober voice. "Rather young, don't you think? He hasn't done any conjuring on his own yet, has he?"
"Not yet," Robert's friend replied, "but it won't be long now, at the rate he's going."
"How is he doing with prima donna numbers? Does he know how many there are?"
"Precisely as there are ordinary and odd and hopping numbers," said Robert quickly.
"Very good. He can skip the examination. What is his name?"
"Robert."
"Stand, Robert. By the power vested in me as General Secretary, I hereby accept you into the lowest rank of number apprentices and bestow upon you in recognition thereof the Order of Pythagoras, 5th class."
With these words, he ceremoniously hung a heavy golden chain with a 5-pointed star around Robert's neck.
"Thank you," said Robert. "It goes without saying that this distinction shall remain a secret," the General Secretary added. Without so much as a nod, turned on his heels and disappeared.
Well, that's that, said Robert's friend and master. "I must be going. You're on your own now."
"What?" cried Robert. "You can't leave me like that."
"Sorry," said Teplotaxel, "but I have my own work to attend to." Robert saw that Teplotaxel was moved. Robert was too. On the brink of tears, in fact, he hadn't realized how much a part of his life the number devil had become. But neither the one nor the other felt it seemly to show his emotions. So all Teplotaxel said was, "Goodbye, Robert." And all Robert said was, "Bye." In twinkling, his friend was gone.
Robert was now all alone at the gigantic table. How in heaven's name was he going to get home? He wondered. He felt the chain weighing heavier around his neck and the delicious pie growing heavier in his stomach. And before long, he had nodded off and was soon so fast asleep that for all he knew, he had never left his room on his master's shoulders. He awoke in his bed, of course, with his mother shaking him and saying, "Time to get up, Robert! If you don't get up this very instant, you'll be late for school." "The same as always," Robert said to himself. "In your dreams, you get delicious pies to eat. You may even get a chain with a star hung around your neck. And the minute you open your eyes, everything's back to normal." But as he stood in front of the mirror in his pajamas brushing his teeth, he felt something tickling his chest and looked down to see a tiny, five-pointed star on a thin golden chain. He wouldn't believe his eyes. This time, his dream had become true. After he dressed, he took the chain off and stuck it in his pocket. He didn't want his mother asking silly questions. Where did that star come from? She'd want to know the minute she saw it. Boys don't wear jewelry. How could he tell her it was the emblem of a secret order? Things were normal in school, except that Mr. Baca looked more tired than usual and almost immediately took cover behind the newspaper to eat his pretzels in peace. But first, he set forth a problem he was sure the class would take the whole hour to solve. "How many of you are there in the class?" he asked, and the eager beaver Doris shot up her hand and said, 38. "Good, Doris. Now, I want you to pay close attention. It's the first boy down here in the front. What's your name again?" "Oh, yes, Albert." "Well, if Albert gets one pretzel and Betsy gets two pretzels and Charlie gets three, Doris four, Enrique five, Felice six, and so on, all the way up to the number 38 back there, how many pretzels do I need to buy to supply the entire class?" Robert was incensed. Mr. Baca and his mind-boggling problems, he thought. Now we'll have to work like the devil while he takes it easy. Robert didn't let on how annoyed he was at the situation, but while all his classmates hunched over their notebook, he simply stared out into thin air.
"What's the matter, Robert?" Mr. Baca asked. "Dreaming again?"
"So he does. Keep one eye on the class," said Robert to himself. "No, no," he said aloud. "I'm working on your problem," and he started writing. 1 + 2 + 3 + 4 + 5 + 6. God, how boring. By the time he got to 11, he was totally confused. He, the bearer of the Order of Pythagoras, even if it was only fifth class. But then he realized he wasn't wearing the star he'd left in his pocket. Cautiously, he didn't want Mr. Bockle to see. He hung it around his neck, under his shirt. In a flash, he had the most elegant solution to the problem. Triangle numbers. What else? It was as if he had learned them just for the occasion. How did they go now? He wrote the following. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. 13, 13, 13, 13, 13, 13. 6 times 13 equals 78. If it worked for the numbers from 1 to 12, it would work for 1 to 38. 1, 2, 3, dot, dot, 18, 19, 38, 37, 36, dot, 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 21, 20, 39, 39, 39, dot, 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 39, 39. 19 times 39 equals. Cautiously again, he pulled the calculator out of his briefcase and entered the following under the desk. 19 times 39 equals 741. Got it, he cried. Nothing to it.
What?
Said Mr. Baca, letting his newspaper drop.
Well, what's the answer?
741, said Robert softly. You could have heard a pin drop.
How did you do it?
Mr. Baca asked. Oh, said Robert, clutching the star under his shirt. It practically solved itself. And he silently thanked the number devil for all he had done for him. And that is the end of The Number Devil, a mathematical adventure by Hans Magnus Enzensberger. Before we conclude, I would just like to repeat this, the big warning that I stated at the very beginning. Warning. Nothing in a dream is quite as it is in school or books. When Robert and the Number Devil talk about mathematics, they use some unusual expressions. No wonder the Number Devil is anything but a usual story. So don't think the dream words they use will be understood by everyone. Your mathematics teacher, for instance, or your parents mention hopping or rutabagas to them, and they won't know what you're talking about. Grown-ups have different words for such things. When they make a number hop twice, they square it or raise it to the power of 2. They don't take the rutabaga, they take the square root.
in mathematics classes, prima donna numbers are called prime numbers, imaginative numbers, imaginary numbers, and you will never hear your teachers say five broom because the way they learned it to say it from their teachers is five factorial. Technical terms don't exist in dreams. Nobody dreams in big words. So when the number devil talks in images and set numbers, hopping instead of raising them to power of X or Y, it's not just kid stuff. In dreams, we do as we please. In class, however, we never sleep and seldom dream. Your teacher is right to use the expression used by mathematicians the world over. Please do the same, or you may get into trouble. And that is the end of the number devil. A mathematical adventure. With night 11, we kind of dove into the concept of proofs and really understanding that proofs are not just something that is easy to come by. One loophole can basically throw out the whole proof. Proofs have to be guaranteed for every single possible number and equation and all that stuff. And it then opened up a lot of them, like a point cannot be divided in half because it's not an actual fixed, a single point. It's not actually has any volume, any depth, any length or width. And then this last episode, this night 12 was kind of more of a little cute ending one where we get to mention pi, and then we also get to mention Pythagoras. We get to really meet some of the characters. And mathematicians, understanding that math, unfortunately, once was primarily dominated by men. However, women, of course, are taking it in STEM as well, making it more than just a man's field. And yeah, that was basically the number devil from the basics of 11 times 11 being 121, all the way to full-on proofs of using Fibonacci numbers, the golden ratio in calculating the diameter of a pentagon, proofs and the basics of how they're formed, and number triangles, of course. This was a very interesting book. I definitely think that it's intriguing. I like how they teach some really complex things, really got into the proofs of it, while also starting off relatively light and not keeping it too easy all the way, building off piece after piece, especially with the triangle numbers, really forming that and how it really was impactful for a few chapters. So I like this book quite a bit. I give it 4 out of 5 stars. At points, it kind of did feel a little bit dragging on and kind of a little bit repetitive at points, especially with the triangle numbers. It kind of just like constantly brought it up, which I understand, but I also was kind of hoping for like little other tricks as well, even like a little bit of trigonometry or Pythagorean theorem or something, even though it mentioned with radical 2. With that in mind, I just want to say tomorrow, or not even tomorrow, but the next episode, I've got a surprise. I am going to, in honor of this book, be reading the first 2,000 prima donna numbers. And 2,000 seconds is about 33 minutes, so it's definitely going to be a long, interesting challenge. But after that, this season will end, and we will move on to season 2, which will be focused first on The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. And that will be an interesting book as well. And I have another book possibly going right after as well that will connect to it. I do not know yet if I'm going to do it. But yeah, look forward to those two big things. Tomorrow, or not even tomorrow, but next time, next episode, we've got the first 2,000 prima donna numbers. And then we have The Metamorphosis. Thank you so much for attending this book. I definitely enjoyed it a lot. I hope you did as well. And again, this is The Number Devil, A Mathematical Adventure by Hans Magnus Enzensberger. Thank you so much for attending this session. Thank you for attending this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Bye-bye.